You are listening to Dauber Prospects Radio, episode 32. It's our last episode of the summer series. The teams that are left, Washington, Montreal, Columbus, Nashville, and we're joined by DauberProspects.com associate editor Hayden Sobolewski, who's talking Colorado Avalanche prospects. So let's get started. Hey everybody, Paul Zwanbeck here. Welcome to episode 32 of Dauber Prospects Radio, the best and only fantasy hockey program dedicated to hockey prospects. The DPR show is produced every other week for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at DauberProspects.com. Come back often and feel free to subscribe to our show on iTunes. You can also follow us on Twitter at DPR_show. I am once again with my co-host, Peter Harling, managing editor of DauberProspects.com. Peter, how's this? Summer is over. Officially, it's our last summer series. It is officially over.
Kids are back to school. I was back in a rink. Summer's over, man.
Yes, we both know that September 22nd is officially the end of summer and the start of fall. But yes, kids are back in school. You're back in a rink, which is, that means it's all hockey. All hockey, all business the rest of the year.
Yeah, you got the rookie camps going on this weekend coming up all across North America. So, we'll get our riders out in some rinks, and we'll be on top of that. Look for some prospect ramblings coming up on rookie camps.
And speaking of our writers, some of our senior writers have been busy, and you've been busy compiling a prospect organizational ranking. And what a fantastic list from 31 to 1. It was long. It was a good read. It was a long read, but such excellent work. You guys put up a really good list, and why don't you go through it a little bit with us?
Yeah, so what we did was since taking over, one of the components on the site that I noticed that was kind of getting really dated was the prospect rankings page. It hadn't been done for a few years. So I wanted to get the teams up to speed and bring them some editorial content. And now that we've kind of got our momentum and everything, all our ducks in a row, that was the next on my to-do list of things to tackle. And I left a little bit later because it's a pretty big project. It's a daunting task. So I recruited the help of about eight or nine of our senior writers and associate editors that were available to help. And we made a list. We went through everyone ranked, all 31 NHL teams, top 10 prospects, gave them a letter grade and came up with an overall point system for each team and had their own list of 1 through 31. And then each one of those writers sent that list to me. And I made a consensus ranking out of it, sort of like what we do for the fantasy ranking, the draft article. And that gave us our final ranking, which put Philadelphia number one on the list. It was a lot of work. We have a little short blurb on each team and why they're there or what kind of prospects they have or what they don't have in some cases or how the voting looked. In some cases, there were some discrepancies, and some teams were rated really high by one writer and really low by another, or some of them were all pretty much in the same area. It was a really entertaining and fascinating exercise. It's all subjective. So it's just our consensus ranking. We're getting a lot of feedback on it, some good, some bad, some people not understanding what the criteria was and how a team like Toronto can be so high. But that's because we counted 21 and under prospects, so they got bonus points for Matthews, Marner, and Nylander. Like you said, it's a good read, and take it with a grain of salt and enjoy it.
Yeah, and you didn't even throw out a spoiler alert when you said Philadelphia number one. Sorry, everybody that hasn't watched or looked at the list, but yeah, Philadelphia number one. We won't give away much more because we want you to go check it out. And yeah, did 31-1. Every single team's there. And it's a great read. It's got good quotes from a bunch of the different writers and, of course, from you, Peter Harling. Let's get into the last episode of the summer series. Who do you want to go to first, Washington or Columbus? Those are the two teams in segment one.
Let's start with the Caps.
All right, that would be my team. We're going to start right off the top with Jacob Vrana, dual-eligible, 81% owned. Vrana's set up to be the second or third-line winger. And there's not many wingers in Washington that are going to be eligible to play. They are very shallow on the wings, both left and right. And Vrana's got the chance to steal big-time minutes. And hopefully being scratched from last season's Calder Cup playoffs for Hershey will be in the past, and maybe his attitude changes a little bit after that and realizes that he's not the top of the heap, and he has to work hard for his minutes, and hopefully Verana shows that, and I'm pretty sure he's the number one guy in the Capitals organization to make that step.
Do you think you could end up in a top six role? I mean, as you're saying, they're pretty thin. You've got Ovechkin and Oshie are locks. Burakovsky's probably a lock as well on the wing. So that leaves one more spot. He's competing with Brett Connolly and Tom Wilson, I suppose. Do you think he could work his way into a top six or even power play time?
If he comes with the right attitude out of training camp and into the start of the season, I think Verana's got the skill and the talent and the just much better gameplay for the NHL than Wilson or Connolly as a scoring line player. Wilson's built for the third or fourth line, so I don't think he's going to move up much. And Connolly hasn't really shown much since he's made the NHL. He's been through a couple of teams, Tampa, Boston, and now Washington. So I think Verana's got the spot. His name is in pencil, I'm sure of it, with Barry Trotz, and let's hopefully he erases that and puts it in ink, and he's got that top six role.
All right. So a player I'm a little bit familiar with, I saw him play with the Belleville Bulls when he was in the OHL before he got traded. He's only 16% owned. Tyler Greivac comes over as a waiver claim, I believe it was. And he's a big forward. What's his role going to look like with the Caps? Is he going to make the team?
I think he will make the team. It'll be a bottom six role because their top guys, Backstrom and Kuznetsov, aren't going anywhere. He's going to probably have to fight with Lars Eller for a third line spot. But if he ends up on the fourth, I think his production is going to be limited no matter where he lands, the third or fourth line. Played 52 games last year with Minnesota, 7 goals, 2 assists for 9 points. So not great production, but moving to the Capitals organization, I'm pretty sure their third and fourth lines are a little more productive than the Minnesota Wild's bottom six. So moving from Minnesota to Washington is going to help that production, but I think it's still going to be on a limited basis.
Yeah, he's huge, so he should be able to get you some hits and maybe some penalty minutes as well. One more winger before we move on. Another prospect who has, I think, potential to crack the roster maybe, Riley Barber. What's your thoughts on Barber?
I put him down as a long shot, but then I went back through the winger depth, and there's not enough wingers on the roster, so Riley Barber's maybe got a place in the bottom six. 37% owned. He could be a mid-season call-up. I think he'll get at least half a season of gameplay, games played-wise. But Barber with the Bears last year, 39 games, 13 points, 14 assists for 27 points. The year before that, 74 games, 26 goals, 29 assists for 55 points. So if he plays a full season, he's got 50 points from the AHL in a full season. So bring that to the NHL, and he's probably a 30-point guy if he makes the NHL full-time.
Let's move on to the back end now. Madison Bowie, he's a pretty high-profile prospect. I think he was injured a little bit last year, but he's had a couple of seasons in the AHL now. Is he ready?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he is ready, and he might be in hard times for getting minutes with Christian DeJuice, 47% owned. I have no idea how to say Christian DeJuice's last name. If anybody wants to correct me on that would be great. But I think DeJuice is the guy to own over top of Bowie, and I think they might both make the lineup. I think there's only one spot, but if they both play really well, Bowie might have that defensive game, and DeJuice might get a second power play unit as the second defenseman on a power play unit beside maybe Niskanen or maybe Orlov or Carlson or whoever they play on the second power play unit this year. I would rather have Christian DeJuice over Bowie, but Bowie is definitely going to give you the hits, blocks, penalty minutes, if that's what you're looking for in your defenseman. I know a lot of guys like to put their fourth, fifth, sixth defenseman on their lineup as a guy that just picks up all those peripheral numbers and isn't too worried about the power play time. Then I would go with Bowie if you're looking for that, but DeJuice is the better fantasy own, I think.
Well, if I'm in a one-year league, I don't want either of those guys.
This is true.
All right, so let's. Is there anyone else on Washington, or should we move on to Columbus?
I just want to say two guys that are going to be making the jump to the AHL full-time. Connor Hobbs, 26% owned. He played with the Regina Pats last year, 85 points in 67 games. So if he brings that kind of point total to the Hershey Bears, then look out for Connor Hobbs in a year. Siegenthaler's coming over to the AHL to play full-time. He was in the Swiss League last year, and he showed a terrific under-20 tournament at the World Junior Championships last year, 8 points in 10 games played. So two guys that are putting up big numbers in the leagues they were in and maybe could make a name for themselves with the Hershey Bears, but not relevant this year.
Yeah, I like Siegenthaler. When his draft year was coming up, he was we classified him as the best hitter. He's got to get you a lot of penalty minutes, but he doesn't have any offensive upside. But then watching him in the World Juniors last year and watching him live, I was like, holy smokes, this guy can skate really well. He moves around the ice just fine. And then, he plays for Switzerland, so he was their number one defenseman, so he was getting all the offensive power play opportunities on the point. But he was making very good use of them, and did not look out of place. So I think that there's some sneaky good value in that player. But you're right, not this year. Keep an eye on him and how he does in his first year in the AHL.
Yeah, the key line you said there, Peter, was he didn't look out of place, and he was playing alongside Nico Hischier. So that's a big name he's playing along with and didn't look out of place. So Siegenthaler is not going to be a Hischier type at all, but the fact that he can keep pace with Hischier at the world's level is pretty incredible. So, Siegenthaler is definitely on the radar.
All right, let's move on to Seabus. First player on my list is he's a pretty highly owned player. I don't think I'm going to be talking about anyone that no one's heard before. So Oliver Bjorkstrand, he was your one of your favorite picks going into the season last year. Didn't really pan out for him last year, but he's only 86% owned still. The Dauber Prospect Report has him put down for playing 67 games and scoring 42 points. So I think you were just a year early last year. This looks like the year that he's going to have his big breakout. His three-year potential upside is in the 50 to 75 point range, I think. So he's already widely owned, but if you have an opportunity to pick up Oliver Bjorkstrand, I wouldn't hesitate.
Yeah, I'm researching on our season two episodes coming up. So I went back and listened to season one and what we went through. And yeah, I was a big fan of Oliver Bjorkstrand. And I remember being a big fan of Oliver Bjorkstrand. I still am. I literally want to copy and paste that audio and put it into this year because I think I'm still on his bandwagon. I'm still thinking he's going to blow up at some point this year.
Yeah, he might not crack the top six. Maybe for spurts and streaks and injuries and hot streaks and cold streaks and whatnot. But I think you're going to see him on at least the second power play unit. And looking at the Dauber Prospect, the Dauber Fantasy Guide, he's got him projected on the third line with Pierre-Luc Dubois and Tyler Mott. All three of those guys I'll be talking about. So that could be a pretty fun line to watch and players to own in fantasy. So speaking of which, the next guy on my list is Pierre-Luc Dubois. So Bjorkstrand is ranked second in on the Dauber Prospects top 10, and Dubois is ranked third. He's a left winger, but he plays center in junior, so he might end up being multi-positional eligible. He is 83% owned, so he's on the high side as well. But Dauber forecast him to play the whole season, 72 games, but only 26 points. So this is kind of a player that you're not going to want to race out to get in one-year leagues, even though he was drafted third overall in his draft year. He went back to junior last year after the draft, and he looked like he was suffering from NHLitis. He had a slow start to the season. He got traded right around the World Juniors. He was an important player for Canada at the World Junior. He had a good tournament there. And then upon returning to his club team after the World Juniors, he kind of got his season back on track, and he ended up posting decent point totals in the second half and in the playoffs. So he had a strong finish to the year. His three-year point projection is similar to Bjorkstrand's, but his floor is a little higher, 65 and 75 point range. And he's a beast. He's a big guy too. So if he ends up being eligible for center, he'll get you face-off wins. He'll get you your points. He'll get you your power play points as well. And I wouldn't be surprised if he got you some hits and blocks. So Pierre-Luc Dubois in a one-year league might want to tap the brakes on that. But in a dynasty league, go all in on Pierre-Luc Dubois.
It'll be interesting to see if he gets sheltered offensive minutes, because if Dubinsky's that shutdown role that they like to play him in for the Blue Jackets, maybe Dubois does fill in the line two, because Dubinsky is that shutdown third line guy. And if Dubois can be center eligible and move up to that second line because he's more offensively gifted than Brandon Dubinsky is, maybe he gets the sheltered offensive zone starts and can make something of that. But it's something to look out for throughout camp and preseason.
For sure, it's a possibility. I think it's up to him. I mean, you know what Dubinsky is. He's established commodity. He is what he is. And he's a good second-line center because he's as Sidney Crosby. He's great at shadowing star players and checking them. But he can also cash. He's not, inept offensively. But if Dubois can step up and provide some secondary scoring in a second-line role, and that can slot Dubinsky down to the third-line role, all of a sudden your center depth is looking pretty good.
Let's move on to Vitali Abramov. I remember him getting drafted by the Columbus Blue Jackets and feeling like they stole him. So Vitali Abramov, is he going to be in the NHL this year?
No. And they absolutely did steal him, and you can too. He's only 64% owned, so you're going to have to wait on him for a year. He's only 19 years old, so he's one of those tweeners, right? It's either the NHL or back to junior. AHL is not an option. So it's my opinion, and it's a widely shared opinion, that he'll go back to the Q. The Gatineau Olympics own his rights. He might end up getting traded, though. He'd have pretty good trade value. But he's a player, I think, that has potential to be a CHL scoring leader. He is just a dynamic, offensive, gifted player. He's got wheels. He's got tremendous hands. He can do it all at speed. He's very, very difficult to defend against. He sees the play very well. He's got a laser of a shot. I really love this kid, and I think when he makes it to the NHL next year, he could have an immediate impact. I think there's going to be a lot of ink, or cyber ink, spilt on Vitali Abramov's this season.
Let's move on to Mr. Mott, left winger. Is he going to be in the NHL, Tyler Mott?
Yes. Now, we talked about him at the beginning of last season, too, and I was really high on Tyler Mott. And the reason why, and I still am, and the reason why I'm high on him is because he's got decent offensive skills, but he plays a more all-round game. Back checks hard, forechecks hard, and he's got dual positional options. He can play the left or the right side. So he's only 40% owned on Fantrax. Stauber projects him to play the full season, 76 games played, 21 points. He started the year in Chicago last year, and he came off like gangbusters. We did the who would you rather, Mott or Schmaltz, and right out of the gate, it looked like a slam dunk for Mott, and then he cooled off a little bit, and he was reaching the end of his exemption to clear through waivers. So right before that expired, Chicago sent him back down and essentially buried him in the minors for the rest of the season. Nick Schmaltz played the second half of the season with Chicago and caught fire, and you were the correct choice over me. But this year, Mott's, again, not eligible to go through waivers, so he'll play the full season in the NHL with Columbus. I think he was a key player that they wanted in the trade with Saad and Panarin when they got him back. His 3-year upside is, you know, maybe not as good as some of the other guys. You're talking like 35 to 65 points. But he's an energy player. He'll get you hits and blocks and points. So in multi-cat leagues, his value is really high.
I like how you knocked me down a peg at the beginning of your Columbus Blue Jackets with, like, Oliver Bjorkstrand. You're a year too early, and then you saw I was down. You could feel that I was down, and then you're like, you know what? But you were right with Nick Schmaltz, so pick me back up, Peter. Thanks for that. Let's move on to little-known Markus Hannikainen and tell the listeners a little bit about Hannikainen's game.
All righty. So, first of all, he's a left winger. He's 13% owned. He's undrafted, and Columbus signed him as a free agent back in 2015. Spent the last 2 years playing in the AHL with them. So, he signed with the club through the 18-19 season. Last year, he led Cleveland in goals with 19, shots with 117, and 6 power play goals. He wore the alternate captain's letter, and he ended up playing 10 games for the Blue Jackets in the NHL last year. He had a goal and an assist for 2 points, 16 hits, and 5 blocks. He's 24 years old, so he's not a kid. He's got good size, 6'2", 195. So if you're looking for a peripheral depth winger who's widely unowned, Markus Hannikainen could be your guy. I think there's a really good chance that he plays a lot of games in the NHL this year. And I think he's a high-volume shooter. He might not play in a top-six role, but even if he's not and he's not getting the prime offensive minutes, he's still going to give you the greasy stats. So Markus Hannikainen is a player I think his percentage ownership is low. It should be high. Give him some love.
All right, excellent, Peter. So you gave us 5 good names to keep an eye on or to pick up immediately, or who should be owned in maybe a little deeper leagues and 1-year leagues. When we come back, we're going to get to we only got 3 teams left, Montreal and Nashville. And then later in the show, we will catch up with Hayden talking Colorado.
All right, we're back. Segment 2. It's the DPR show, and it's time to talk a little Montreal Canadiens and Nashville Predators. Let's start with the Habs. Paul, you're up. They got a bunch of forward prospects. Let's talk about some of them. Charles Hudon, is he going to finally break the Habs roster this year?
I think it's going to be, he's going to be in tough. And I think having the Drouin trade come up, trading Mikhail Sergachev for Jonathan Drouin, it's really harmed these prospects coming into the top 6. So that's why I'm not really excited about any of the guys that we're about to name. The Drouin, where he's going to line up in the lineup, is he going to be a centerman? Is he going to be a left wing or right wing? We don't really know until they break camp. So it's going to be something that we need to watch. I'm not as high on Hudon as I am Nikita Sherbak. Their ownership shows that as well. 66% owned for Sherbak, 53% owned for Hudon in Fantrax. I would rather have Nikita Sherbak going into this year, but I think Hudon's the better long-term guy.
Yeah, Sherbak, he's a first-round pick, and he's kind of had his ups and downs since his draft. Where's he playing right? He's in the AHL now, right?
Yes, he is playing in the AHL. Last year, AHL, 66 games, 13 points, 28 assists for 41 points.
Well, that's not too bad.
It's not too bad. He got outscored by Charles Hudon, same season, 56 games, 27 goals, 22 assists for 49 points. So he got outscored by 8 points.
All right, so Sherbak is 66% owned. Hudon is 53% owned. So they're about halfway gone in most leagues. So they're available. So they got 2 more guys who are only about 25% owned. Are these guys fantasy relevant or busts? Jacob De La Rose and Daniel Carr.
I wouldn't put bust on Jacob De La Rose yet. He had so much upside coming out of his draft year, and then it just kind of wavered away, and then Sherbak and Hudon kind of became the top dog wingers in the organization. So I think De La Rose has just fallen down the rankings to not be relevant right now. But I think, I have a feeling he should just get moved and be in a new organization. I don't think he's going to get a chance with the Habs anytime soon. So no, not a bust. Bust is a tough one to put on a kid. I think De La Rose just needs a change of scenery. As for Daniel Carr, 24% owned, I think he's just an energy guy. I think he's going to make the third or fourth line out of camp. He will play the majority of his time on the third or fourth line. I don't see him being at all close to a scoring line. So Daniel Carr is going to give you the peripherals out of the four of them, but I would rank them Sherbak, Hudon, De La Rose, Carr, but I would swap Hudon and Sherbak if it's a deep dynasty long-term. If I want to plan for 2 years down the road, I'd rather Hudon over Sherbak.
Again, I don't want any of these guys. Okay, let's go to the blue line then. Let's talk about who do they have on defense that could make the team? Jakub Jarabak. I don't know very much about this fella, so shed some light on him for me, would you?
He's going to be their seventh defenseman, and I don't know if he's going to play that much. They have a lot of NHL contract defensemen already made on their roster, so they brought in Mark Streit maybe to be a power play quarterback with Shea Weber, I think. I think he'll be passing the puck to the boomer shot. If Mark Streit doesn't show he's still got NHL game, which he was a healthy scratch for the Penguins in the playoffs, he was just a depth role in case of an injury. He's got either Jordy Benn or Carl Alsner to fall down the depth chart by one or two spots, so Jarabak can jump into their spots. He's 38% owned. I think Jarabak could jump into a second pairing role because Jordy Benn and Carl Alsner are their third and fourth line guy, or third and fourth defenseman. Mark Streit, I have a feeling, is no longer the Mark Streit of the Montreal Canadiens or the New York Islanders or the Philadelphia Flyers. He is well and done. I can't see him being with the Canadiens the entire year. So I think Jarabak has a chance to be that third or fourth guy with maybe a little bit of power play to upside. I would not be putting any wager on that. But Jarabak is basically their only prospect to look out for this year.
That is pretty bleak, but the Montreal rank really low on our organizational prospect rankings, and you're seeing evidence as to why. But they do have some promise coming. It's just a little bit further down the road, so I don't want to paint them all with such a negative brush. But Yanni Ikonen, Ryan Poehling, Will Bitton, Charlie Lindgren, those are all some prospects that I think certainly have really good fantasy value in dynasty leagues. And another player I think you might want to maybe do a little research on it and keep an eye out is Martin Riway. He had a really serious heart condition or injury, whatever it was, and he missed the entire season. He wasn't able to skate or anything. But it's my understanding, I checked a while ago, that he plans on getting back on the ice and making a return to hockey. So I'm not sure if he'll be able to make it. He's a little undersized guy, but if you might remember him from the World Juniors, he was just outstanding at the World Juniors. So if he can come back, that would be great.
Yeah, another quick update, Peter. I also looked into him. I have him on one of my other dynasty leagues. I picked him up right at the World Junior mark when he went off at the World Juniors. He was available, and I put him on my prospect bench. He has been cleared to skate. I don't know if he has started skating yet, and that's probably as of 3 or 4 weeks ago. So he has been cleared. He's kind of gotten past the illness injury that he had, but I'm not sure if he's skating yet. If he's not skating yet, I don't think he has a place with the Habs, but if he is skating and back to full health, I think he has a chance to be a sneaky pick for the Habs. And don't forget Victor Mattey and Noah Juulsen on the back end. Those guys are coming, just not this year or maybe next year.
Yeah, well, we wish Martin, I think it's Revi, all the best in a speedy recovery. But let's move on from Montreal, and let's go to Music City, Nashville. How's that sound?
Yeah, the the Stanley Cup losers, I guess you could say, the Stanley Cup finalists, Nashville Predators. Let's dive into some of their prospects and see who's coming.
All right, so the first place losers, their top prospect, I think, has to be either Juuse Saros or Vladislav Kamenev. So Kamenev is more of a prospect than Saros is. He's only 60% owned. He's a left winger. He's perhaps not going to have a huge impact this year. He did end up being a member of the Predators' Black Aces last playoff run. So he was with the team for their playoffs, but he only played two NHL regular season games last year. Fantrax projection has him down for 7 points this year, playing 15 games, and he didn't make the Dauber guide for a projection. So he's a long-term asset, a dynasty player. His three-year projection is anywhere from 50 to 75 points. You can bet on one more year in the AHL, but he projects to be a second line center, I think, in short order.
All right, that's kind of good news, kind of not good news. Let's move on to a guy that seemed to have a little bit of injury prone, Mika Salamaki.
Yep. All right, so he's 14% owned. So his ownership is it took a hit because he was so injured last season. He played 9 games total between the AHL and the NHL last year. But he's a little bit on the small size, 5'11", but 203, so he's a bit of a fire hydrant. He's an energy player. He hustles really hard. He's out there. He compensates for his shortness, I guess. Throws a lot of hits, throws a lot of shots on goals. Fantrax projecting him to play pretty much the full season, 75 games and 18 points. Dauber's pretty on par with that, 60 games, 13 points. So he's a player that I think, if you're in a deep league and you're desperate for a roster player and you want someone who can provide you with some peripheral stats from the bottom six, Mika Salamaki might be a really good sleepy pick there.
All right, perfect. A guy that kind of made a name for himself last year in the playoffs. He had 3 goals in 8 games played, kind of made the roster out of nowhere in the playoffs. Frédéric Gaudreau.
Yeah, so Freddie Gaudreau, I don't believe there's any relation to Johnny. Center left wing eligible on Fantrax, 24% owned. Fantrax projects him to have 13 points in 35 games. So that's not a bad point per game ratio if he could just play more games. Dauber sees it kind of similarly. He puts him down for 56 games and 21 points. He signed a 3-year two-way contract this summer based on his hot playoff performance. He spent the last 2 years in the AHL, and he had a total combined 90 points playing in the AHL last year. So he's kind of a tweener. If they get an injury or whatnot, he could see an extended look in the NHL. I cooled on him a little bit after they signed Nick Bonino. I mean, the Fisher retirement, I was like all in on Johnny Gaudreau, and then they signed Nick Bonino, and I'm like, not so much. So he needs a couple of breaks to go his way, but still someone who I think is fantasy relevant in deep pools. A player who is fantasy relevant in any format is Pontus Åberg. He's left wing, right wing eligible, so that's good. You love your dual eligibles. He's 57% owned. So he played a little bit with the Preds last season. He had a good showing in the playoffs. In the AHL last year, where he played the majority of his season, he had 56 games. He's a 30-goal scorer, 52 points. And as I talked about Fisher leaving, they also lost Neal and Wilson. So that opens up some opportunities in the top six. And outside of Bonino, who's a center, they didn't really address, I didn't see anyone that they added that would really challenge for those. So there's a tremendous opportunity for Pontus Åberg to jump into a top six and second unit power play opportunity. So I think this is a person who could be getting over 20 points this season, pushing 30 points. And I think he's going to play pretty much the full season, you know, barring any injuries and whatnot. But he's a roster player, and he's only 57% owned. So I think that might be someone you want to look into in your pool.
All right, perfect. And I noticed you didn't say any defensemen, and Nashville's kind of known for a defenseman factory. Saying that, they picked up Alexei Emelin, so their top five is pretty solid with their big four, and then Emelin, Weber, Irwin, Boteto. Is there anybody deeper that we should be looking out for that's coming through this factory?
On defense, Samuel Girard. He's one of the leading scorers on defense from the Quebec Major Junior League the last couple seasons. He's a full-on offensive defenseman. He is just a wizard with the puck. He does like Denis Savard-style spinoramas and dipsy doodles with it, carries the puck up the ice. He's an amazing skater, but not so good in his own end. In the game I watched him play in the Q last year, he didn't get any defensive zone assignments. And he's a small guy, so you know he doesn't separate the man from the puck very well. So he's got some holes in his game, but man, oh man, if he can learn from a guy like Ryan Ellis, who's also little, that does not struggle with his size defensively or physically, if he can round out his game the way Ellis does, he has even better offensive upside than Ryan Ellis, I think. Frederick Allard is another defenseman. He's coming out of the queue as well. He was a point per game player there as a defenseman. He's 19% owned. Another player come from the queue is centerman Yakov Trenin. I saw him play a lot with Gatineau. The guy is just a tank. He's a really solid two-way player. He looks like a triangle. His shoulders are so broad, and then he's got these like kind of skinny legs. It's kind of funny looking. He looks like a triangle out there. But when he gets the puck and he starts carrying with momentum, he's like a juggernaut. You know, get out of his way. The guy's a freight train coming down the ice. He's really good on the corners. He's really strong on the puck. He's a good net front presence, and he's strong on draws. A player that they signed as a free agent, and I don't know how to pronounce his name, Victor Edsel, E-J-D-S-E-L-L, 19% owned center. He led the Alvexen Swedish Junior Hockey League in scoring last year. And then one player that's turning pro out of college, Tyler Moy, right winger, 9% owned. I think the story with him is Nashville signed him last season, and he was teammate and good buddies with Jimmy Vesey, hoping that he would entice Vesey to sign with Nashville. And it didn't work, but nonetheless, he's a decent enough prospect on his own. So all those right. Is in Nashville turning pro.
All right, perfect, Peter. Thanks thanks for that rundown of the Nashville Predators. And that does it for our jobs of scouting out these teams and finding some fantasy-relevant players for the summer series. We've done 6 episodes now, Peter. Can you believe it? We're done the summer series. We got one more interview to do. We're going to have Hayden Sobolewski on. What is your roundup of our summer series? You got some last take words?
No, it was a blitz, but it's all a bit of a blur now. I'll have to go through and re-listen to the shows, which everyone should do heading into your draft.
All right, perfect. And when we come back from the break, we're going to catch up with one of our own, DauberProspects.com associate editor and the man that covers the Colorado Avalanche, Hayden Sobolewski.
All right, we're back. It's segment 3. It's time to bring on our guest. And this week we have one of our own Dauber Prospects associate editor, Hayden Sobolewski. Actually, I never really pronounced your last name out loud before. Hayden, did I say that right?
You nailed it on the first try.
Yes. So Hayden's one of our longest serving members on Dauber Prospects. So it's high time we got this veteran writer of ours on. So welcome to the show, Hayden. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks, Paul. It's awesome to be on.
It's really funny that you say it's your first time saying it, because I think when I reference Hayden and I think of Hayden's name, it always comes with Sobolewski. It's one of those Hayden Sobolewski. That's just it's a one name guy.
Yeah, it runs through nicely, doesn't it? Okay, so Hayden, you covered the Avalanche for us. Let's talk some Avalanche prospects. And
Sounds
let's
good.
just get right into it and go with the big gun, Tyson Jost. I'm a big fan of this kid. I've been a big fan of his since I saw him with Canada at the U18s. I made sure I drafted him in at least one of my leagues. Even though I thought there'd be a long wait time on him because he was like a college commit, but he's a one and done at college and he's turning pro full time this year. Tell me, I got a first line center in my hands that's going to play max minutes in the NHL and rack up points for me.
I don't think you're too far off. He's definitely going to be a full-time NHLer this year. And when you look at the Avs depth chart, it looks like he's pretty much a sure shot to get that either second or third line center spot, which makes it pretty crazy that he's only 83% owned on Fantrax right now. And that includes keeper leagues. And for a guy who's going to be getting top 6 minutes right off the bat, he needs to be higher owned than that. He got a tryout last year at the end of the season after he turned pro. Didn't score too much in his like 7 or 8 games in the NHL, but he was getting 15 minutes time on ice per game, mostly playing with Landeskog, which shows they know he's going to be a top sixer long term. And that time on ice is only going to go up this year, especially if Duchene ever gets traded. So I think he's an immediate must-own fantasy guy who he's not going to hit it this year, but he'll probably hit 70 points within a couple seasons and a lot of goals. Like a lot of times centermen get lumped in as pure playmakers, but he's got a shot and he's going to get you some goals.
Yeah, you said he's only 83% owned, and we referenced him to maybe like a Clayton Keller, who's also turned pro at the end of last year and is going to be probably a full-time guy in Arizona, and he's like a 97% owned. So the fact that he's like 14% less owned than Clayton Keller, would you put him in the same tier as Clayton Keller, or is he a little step behind?
No, he's a step down. Jost is more likely to be kind of a Taves type. He, like, long term, he's probably always going to be a really good number two centerman, probably a 70-point upside. I mean, on a bad team, he could turn out to be a top line center, and maybe on a good team, he turns out to be one. Like, he's definitely shown the offensive upside, and coach and organization love him. And since I know you love it, Paul, not only is he dual eligible right now, he's multi-eligible. He's under center, left wing, and right wing right now. So there's a lot to like about him from fantasy standpoint.
Yeah, that tri eligibility is so much better than dual eligibility, and the listeners are probably sick of me saying dual eligibility and they just want it out of my vocabulary, but too bad, you're gonna have to hear it for probably the entire season. Dual eligible players are where it's at, that's for sure. Let's
I'm
move on
so
to
sorry for enabling.
Yeah, thanks, Hayden. Thanks. All right, let's move on to their number one draft pick this year, Cale Makar. Is he a year away, 2 years away? How soon is he gonna be wearing an Avs jersey?
If I had to bet on it, I would say he spends 2 years in the NCAA, but the Avs have shown that as soon as the players are ready, they'll commit and they'll sign them. Jost only spent 1 year in NCAA after being drafted. JT Compher, who I'll talk about later, sure they didn't draft him, but they took him out of NCAA after 3 seasons to turn pro, and sure enough was in the lineup pretty quickly after that. So I'd say at least 1 or 2 years for Makar in the NCAA, but when they do sign him and when he does turn pro, the Avalanche like to get him right into the lineup.
Yeah, I wonder if that has something to do with the fact that it seems like every summer there's a player or two that has played out their collegiate eligibility, so 4 years in NCAA, and then that enables them to become an unrestricted free agent. And the Avalanche just got burned with that with Will Butcher, and they just took advantage of that with Alexander Kerfoot. So I wonder if that's not just an Avalanche trend, but like something that we're going to start seeing league-wide, where NHL teams start putting on real pressure for players to sign their pro contracts in their junior year.
Yeah, I could see that being a thing. Both the Jost and Compher transitions over happened before the whole terrible Will Butcher situation, so I don't think it's entirely based on that, but you're right, that's probably going to make contract signings happen a lot sooner for those kids. But yeah, Makar is going to have huge offensive upsides as a defenseman when he does come over after one or two seasons, and he's only 76% owned right now, and with his type of defenseman, it's kind of high risk, high reward. There is a chance he doesn't transition well to pro. Maybe he's too small or not quick enough, but I think he's the real deal, and he's going to be a very, very important fantasy defenseman not too long.
All right, moving over to Alex Kerfoot. Where is he going to line up in the depth chart, and how many years away, or is he coming right away to the Avalanche?
I think one of the reasons he chose the Avalanche over much more competitive teams and nicer destinations is probably the fact that he knows he has a chance to make the team right out of camp. NHL center depth isn't amazing in Colorado. It's not the worst, but he has a shot to become either a third or fourth line center on that team. He's going to push for it out of camp. I think he can do it. I wouldn't bet on it, and I don't think his offensive upside is quite as high as the hype may lead people to believe, but immediate NHL playing time brings fantasy value to anyone, and I don't think he should be ignored.
Yeah, I saw him play a little bit in the Beanpot tournament, and he was pretty dominant in that tournament, but I think you're right. I'm not sold on his ability to play a top six role in the NHL at any point in his career. I think there's a lot of buzz around his file right now because of his free agency status and that he left and signed with Colorado. And I think you're right as well that he's got a lot of opportunity to start higher in the depth chart with Colorado than some other organizations. And that's the thing with guys that have played out their collegiate year. They're not 19 or 20 anymore. They're like 23 or whatever. So it's time to make hay in your career. Otherwise, you know, if he has to spend 2 years in the AHL, then that's probably the highest level he'll really ever play. So it's time to make his move and try and get into the NHL sooner rather than later. And I think, yeah, maybe third line would be a career upside for him. Yeah?
Yeah, I would say so. I think he has a chance to be a good third line center, but probably not higher than that.
All right. So let's talk about a couple other prospects that they have that I think might be getting pretty close. You can tell me which one of these guys you think has either the fastest track to the NHL or the higher upside, JT Compher and AJ Greer.
These are two guys I really like. Maybe it's because I've been covering the Avalanche for a while, but I'm really high on both these guys. So JT Compher, center/left wing, he's kind of been splitting between playing winger in the Avs top six or center in their bottom six. I think he finished last season with around 70 or 80 faceoff wins, so he can maybe bring you a little bit of faceoff win stats from the wing, which is nice. Long term, I do see him as a winger on the Avs, and he's going to be one of those really valuable guys who can just go up and down the lineup anywhere they need. He just killed it in the NCAA in his senior year, scored a ton of points, and then carried it right into the AHL. He spent a bit more than half a season there as a rookie, was nominated for Rookie of the Year, if my memory serves me right. So he has all the offensive upside you could want, and then he's kind of moved into an energy role, and he's a full-time NHLer for sure on the Avs. I would see him slotting into the second or third line left wing spot and possibly some power play and penalty kill time. I don't know. I like him as a sure bet NHLer with sneaky value to sneak up the lineup.
Yeah, and Compher's only 54% owned in Fantrax, so he is available out there. As for AJ Greer, what do you think of his game? And he's 36% owned in Fantrax, so you might be able to get your hands on Greer a little quicker than Compher or easier than Compher, but tell us a little bit about Greer's game.
Greer is an absolute power forward that is becoming a bit of a rarity these days. So Greer had his ups and downs in major junior. He kind of struggled in the NCAA and then moved to the QMJHL, where he had a lot more success and was a playoff beast. And he spent last year in the AHL, his first year pro. He hit 15 goals and 38 points, which is pretty good for an AHL rookie turning pro. He also hit 78 penalty minutes. And this guy is already 6'3", 205 pounds, and he plays like it. He's not necessarily a gritty guy, but he can get to the net. He has the skill. You can look up his stats. He's scored a lot of points in the QMJHL. He has the offensive upside and the size. He's a big piece of the Avs' future, and you can tell that the organization just loves him. And he was actually named AHL Man of the Year for all of the public work he does. You can tell he's going to be a big part of the Avs' future, and he has huge rotisserie value when he does make the NHL. But I think he's going to spend at least another year in the A.
Okay, a player turning pro that I'm a big fan of. I've seen him play a lot when he was with Gatineau. Is Nicholas Meloche. He's a big defenseman. He's got good mobility. Good offensively, defensively as well. He plays with size. He's really vocal on the ice. He's got some leadership skills to him. I think he's the whole package. Maybe a little bit of jack of all trades, master of none aspect to his game, which keeps him a little bit lower on the radar. But I think he's an underrated prospect. I don't think he's going to make the Avalanche in his first year as a pro. I think he's going to play at least the full season in the A. But tell me where you see him slotting in the future on their depth chart.
I agree with everything you said. I do think he's going to spend at least a year, maybe two in the AHL. But like you described it, he's a beast back there. He's 6'3", 205, just good at everything in the queue. And does it no matter what. He was traded in both of the last two seasons and so played for three different teams in total and just like never skipped a beat. So if the transition to pro goes well, he has the chance to be a stud. Long term, he's going to be a top four defenseman for sure. Top two might be pushing it a little bit, but he has the potential. I'd say in the far future, Cale Makar will be the number one pairing right defenseman, Nicholas Meloche, second pairing right defenseman.
One real quick, Chris Biegrass, he's a little bit closer to the NHL. Does he make the team this year, and what's his upside look like?
He's going to push for a spot. The real challenge is going to be whether or not he's fully healthy from his massive concussion last season. The team tried not to publicize it, but he had a really bad concussion, pretty much killed his season, but he did come back from it for a few games and looked pretty good, and he looked great before that. I think he can push for a spot out of camp, and can, if he's a full-time NHLer, he's at least a 20-25 point guy.
All right, Hayden, you gave us a lot of great information on these guys, and we want one last sleeper that maybe is off the board, or maybe an opinion on Andrei Mironov. I saw him in the top four in Dauber's fantasy guide. Is Andrei Mironov kind of a sleeper? And if not, is there another guy that you're looking out for?
Andrei Mironov, I think, is a pretty sure bet to make the Avs this season. His fantasy upside isn't enormous. He's there for the hits and the blocks and maybe some penalty minutes. He's never going to score more than maybe 15 points unless he's put in a great situation, but he is going to make the Avs. As for sleeper, JC Beaudin is another QMJHL standout, a centerman. He's turning pro this year. He'll play at least, I'd say, two seasons in the AHL, but this guy has just developed amazingly. Started as in a defensive role on a stacked team and then worked his way up past other pure offensive guys to just become the entire package in a top centerman. So he's definitely a sleeper to keep your eye on.
Yeah, especially if they're unable to sign Zadorov. I think he's still unsigned, so that would certainly open up lots of room on the blue line, and it's a pretty thin roster to begin with. Hayden, let our listeners know where they can find your writing and what your Twitter handle is.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Sobolesky H, which is Sobolesky H. I write a ramblings on Dauber Prospects every Sunday, and I take care of the Colorado Avalanche page there, so check it out for any of the players I didn't get time to talk about today.
Good stuff, Hayden. Thanks so much for coming on.
No problem. Great to be on.
All right, talk to you later, Hayden, and thank you for coming on to talk some Colorado prospects who could be fantasy relevant this year. We will put Hayden's Twitter handle on our show notes on dauberprospects.com if you would like to give him a follow. That would be awesome. We also want to thank you, the listener, for tuning in throughout the entire summer. We have officially finished our summer series. Prospect tournaments begin September 8th and continue through the weekend. On our next episode, we will be breaking down some prospects whose stock are rising or falling from their tournament play. Don't forget, if you want to support Dauber Prospects Radio, you can head to patreon.com/DPRshow and become a DPR patron by becoming a draft eligible, a late round sleeper, a first rounder, a scout, or even a corporate sponsor. To get into the CHL fantasy pool and compete against myself and Peter, you'll need to become a late round sleeper. Only $3 a month. You can become a patron with as little as $1 a month. Go have a look. That's patreon.com/DPRshow. patreon.com/DPRshow. Please make sure to give us a follow on Twitter at DPR_show. You can also follow our personal accounts at Zwambag, ZWAMBAG, and at P Harling, PHARLING. That's it for now. Talk to you soon, Peter.
Cheers.